Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds. And joining me as ever is my partner from Sky Sports coverage of the NFL, Jeff Rimbold. And Jeff, exciting times now for fans of the NFL because some of the camps are open. The Minnesota Vikings and Pittsburgh Steelers, who play in that Hall of Fame game to kick off the preseason on August the 9th, they're in. There are some rookies in around the NFL as well. It's almost football time.
It is almost football time. And now the camp to me, Neil, is really the essence of football. That's where so much, if you gave me the choice, now this may sound crazy, but if you gave me the choice, go watch a regular season game or go spend a week at training camp, I'd spend a week at training camp, because that's when you really see what happens with a football team and how it grows and how it's selected. And I think as a matter of fact, on our flight to Saskatchewan to play last weekend, I had a couple of episodes of Hard Knocks put on my laptop so I could watch training camp on my way to go play a pro football game. So that's how goofy I am.
Yeah, I absolutely love training camp. And later this week, I'll be very fortunate to head off to the US. I'm going to go and visit the Cowboys. So catch up with your old friend Jason Garrett and some of those British players and coaches that are with the Cowboys. Then I'm going to go up the coast to the 49ers. Then I'm going to go to and have breakfast with Jim Tomsula. Then I'm going to go and visit the Chiefs, the Lions, and the Buffalo Bills. And Jeff, I thought I had a good plan in place, but we've just talked before we started recording this podcast. So I'm going to finish with the Cowboys on the West Coast around probably about 6 o'clock on the Saturday night. And I thought, well, I'm probably going to go to sleep quite early. So I'm going to go back to my hotel, get something to eat quickly, and then go to sleep. But then I'm going to drive from about 2 in the morning till, well, I hope only about 7 or 7.30, up the coast, up the Pacific coast, to Santa Clara to meet the 49ers. And I thought that was quicker than driving an hour and a half back to LA, going through airport security, flying up to San Francisco, driving an hour back down to Santa Clara. Now, I didn't realize there was an airport in Santa Barbara. You could have told me earlier.
You could have gone from Santa Barbara to San Jose and saved yourself a whole lot of heartache, I'll tell you that. But I want to know, who's the travel agent that made that itinerary? Because that is, you're going to fly into Buffalo at 10 at night, then you're going to drive to Rochester and be on the training, on the field that morning, then after training camp, drive back to Buffalo, fly to New York, and then fly to London. I thought I was going to get a chance to see you in Buffalo while you're here. I was looking forward to that.
Blink and you miss me. So every day I'm filming during the day, and every evening I'm flying or driving somewhere. And I think I put the itinerary together, so I've got no one really to blame but myself. But it will be great fun, and you're right. I mean, training camps are just fantastic. From the fan in me loves being that close to the players. I think you see more, and I think you see how players carry themselves, how they practice. I talked about that in the mini camps earlier this summer. You can see how people interact with each other on the field. From a media point of view, during the regular season, if I've ever been out in the States, we get the first 15 minutes of practice, and then that's kind of stretching with a little bit of lobbing the ball around, and then it's closed to the media. Training camp, everything's open. You see everything. It's all laid out there. And it's not just, in the regular season, practices are important because you're preparing for that weekend's game, and it's vital that you get everything right. But there is a methodical part of that. You get that in training camp, preparing for the season. But, Jeff, you also get guys who are absolutely fighting for their lives and for their careers.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where the drama of the game really is in training camp, because there's so many side stories. There's so many, guys that come out of nowhere and end up being tremendous players. You're going to go see Cole Beasley when you're in Oxnard with the Cowboys. And here's a guy, an undrafted free agent, 5'8", 170 pounds, and really nobody gave him a chance when he was coming out of SMU. And, I talked to Jason and said, Jason, take a chance on the kid. I'm just telling you, he's going to be hard to cut. He ends up leaving training camp because of, some incidents with the veteran players. They talk him into coming back. And now I saw, he just signed a $7 million contract and was the slot back in the NFL who had the most caused missed tackles after he caught the ball last year. He plays extremely well in the slot for the Cowboys. Mm. There's a story right there. Those, and every year they're one of those kind of guys, or two or three of those kind of guys that just come out of nowhere. And, you know, I was watching the issue Hard Knocks, like I said the other day, Victor Cruz, in his first exhibition game, wearing number three for the Giants, catches three touchdown passes, and Rex walks over to Tom Coughlin and goes, "Hey, I don't know who number three is, but he's a hell of a player."
Yeah.
Well, you know, Victor Cruz ends up being one of the top receivers in the league. So that's the drama of training camp.
Jeff, three of the five teams that I'm going to go and visit do something which is becoming increasingly rare in the NFL. The Cowboys will be out in Oxnard, California, as I mentioned. The Kansas City Chiefs will be in St. Joseph, Missouri. And the Buffalo Bills will be at St. John Fisher College in Pittsford, New York, which is outside of Rochester in upstate New York. But more and more teams are staying at home now. I think we're up to around about 65-66% of the teams in the NFL choose to stay in their own facilities. It used to be that everyone went away for training camp. What's your thought on that as a coach? Which do you prefer? Do you prefer taking everyone away, or do you prefer the comforts of home?
You know, to me, Neil, I training camp is when you go away, when you get away as a football team. You know, I know in 01, when I was with Kansas City in training camp, we went to University of Wisconsin, River Falls.
Yeah.
And that was at a time when they had what was called, referred to it as the Cheese League. The Vikings were in Mankato, which was very close. The Saints were actually, they had their training camp up in Wisconsin. The Bears had their training camp up in Wisconsin. The Chiefs had their training camp up in Wisconsin. And so you had an opportunity to interact with other teams. And I just think that time away as a football team, everybody's staying in the dorms. Everybody's, you know, whether you're the biggest star on the team or you're the lowliest free agent rookie trying to make the team, you're all staying in the same facility. You're all eating at the same place. And I think that's where a team really is, you know, it's forged together during those hot, tough training camp practices, those long meetings, all of it. Now, I'm a traditionalist that way, but I do understand the fact that now, as these teams have invested so heavily in beautiful training facilities, and, you know, when you take a football team on the road, it's you're going on safari. You got to pack up everything that you have, weight rooms, meeting rooms, copy machines, fax machines, everything. I mean, it's such a huge undertaking to take a team, an entire football team, and all of the practice facility and all of it on the road. You know, 2 days before we got to River Falls, it was a lineup of 18-wheelers at the Chiefs facility, just packing up everything and moving it. And then you got to turn around and move it back 3 weeks later. So I understand why teams are going more to staying in hotels and staying at their own facility. But to me, the training camp will always be going away to some small college and you know, being on campus again and staying in the dorms. And, you know, that's to me, training camp.
Yeah, and training camp to me, Jeff, is side of the field, watching the biggest stars in the NFL, keeping some crazy hours, but I love every minute of it. And actually, Jeff, I mentioned this in the summer. I think I see, you know, and I said it earlier just a few minutes ago, you do see things and you get struck by things that you know, might be kind of, I don't know, sort of missed on the bigger picture. So, you know, I talked earlier in the summer about Josh Freeman and how I felt it was going to be hard for him to, you know, get back to where he was, because it's hard to have that many reps when you're, you know, a third string quarterback running with the threes or running with the fours. And I was struck by that again this week, because did you see Josh Freeman got released by the Dolphins? So that was, you know, those kind of things that you see in training camp. I think, like you said, with Cole Beasley, there are so many stories. Every team has them. There's 53, well, in training camp, what's it, 90-man rosters. So, you know, there's so much going on there. But I guess with Josh Freeman, it was, you know, again, he's going to look back when he's old and gray and maybe wonder, did he really take make the best of his chance in the NFL?
Yeah, you know what? There's a guy again, and this is the drama of sport. This is the drama of the National Football League. There's a guy that had all of the physical tools when he came out of Kansas State. Everybody said he was going to be the next one. They had anointed him as a starter in the NFL and maybe a, you know, Pro Bowl level quarterback with big arm and great mobility, and you know, just there's so much more to it. You know, there's so much more to being a great player, and you know, unfortunately for Josh Freeman and you know, for the Bucks and everybody else that's, you know, given him an opportunity, he never really grasped it. He didn't understand about the work that has to go into it, the, you know, the study that has to go into it, all of the other things that contribute, the leadership qualities that contribute to making a starting quarterback in the National Football League. And that's why he's now, you know, an ex-NFL quarterback.
One of the things that makes training camps, as you mentioned, Jeff, is that fight for positions. And we've got real battles, genuine battles for quarterback positions around the NFL this summer, which again makes things really interesting. And I know from experience that some of those battles are wide open. I was talking to the public relations staff of the Buffalo Bills this week, and how it works when you're going out to visit a team, you kind of have your list. These are the seven or eight guys that I would really like to interview. So, you know, Rex Ryan, I want to interview Mario Williams. I need Sammy Watkins. I need LeSean McCoy. And I had on my list Matt Cassel. And the more and more I'm seeing with the Buffalo Bills, I'm seeing that this is very much an open competition between Cassel, Tyrod Taylor, who seems to have emerged from nowhere, and EJ Manuel as well. So, I went back to the Bills, and they said, well, let's for now sub out Matt Cassel and put another player in, and then you can interview our starting quarterback on the telephone closer to the season, because coach has made it clear it is an open competition. So I've got this question I'm going to drag out of the mailbag now, Jeff, from Peter Joy, who says, which team has the most interesting quarterback battle this preseason, and who will win that starting spot? So, I mean, we've got the Bills, we've got the Jets with Geno Smith, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Bryce Petty. We've even got the Cleveland Browns with Josh McCown, because Mike Pettine came out this week and said there's no guarantee that McCown is the starter. Johnny Manziel is in there. We've got Brian Hoyer and Ryan Mallett at Houston with those Hard Knocks cameras on them. Which one's the most interesting to you, Jeff?
Well, I think the one in Buffalo, to me, is the most intriguing because of the fact I think Buffalo and the Jets, those two, because they're the best football teams, in my opinion, or the most talented football teams that don't have a quarterback, and they're in a division where they're really the top level team. I think New England has taken a step back with their losses on defense. So, you know, each of those teams, both the Jets and the Bills, I think are talented enough on their rosters now that they can make a run in that division if they can get the quarterback play that they need. Now, it's interesting watching the Buffalo. Let's focus on Buffalo a little bit, Neil. And I think one of the things that's interesting about Buffalo is kind of the spin that's coming out of Buffalo about, you know, that competition. When Cassel was signed, it was basically kind of, the understanding was, well, he'll be the guy and, you know, he can be just good enough to manage the game. We'll run the ball with Shady McCoy. You know, we'll throw play action. We'll do the things that Joe Roman did with the 49ers, their new offensive coordinator. Mm. Then they go out and get Tyrod Taylor. Now, that changed the entire dimension. Now, all of a sudden, everything coming out of Buffalo is this is an open competition. They talk all the time about what a great athlete Tyrod Taylor is. Maybe when you hear them say, again, I don't know if this is true or not, but they say the best athlete at the quarterback spot in the National Football League. And I temper all that with the fact that one of the reasons he's in Buffalo is he never took that next step in Baltimore. Mm. You saw the tremendous athleticism. You saw, you know, so many things he can do. But there was question about whether he really not his work habits, just whether he really could take that next step as a quarterback.
Greg Roman's had that with Colin Kaepernick in 49ers, hasn't he?
Yeah, and that's the intriguing part. And this is what I'm really anxious to hear what you have to say after you go there and really see them practice and see what they're doing. Because that's, again, you try and connect the dots as much as you can. And that's the intrigue as we get into training camp. Cassel is not that guy. Cassel's a more, you know, a game manager, more of a standard NFL drop back quarterback. He's raised at USC in the pro game, in the pro style game. Then he went to New England, and that's where he had a brief he's had a couple brief, really good days, and he had one good year. But that's not, he's not a Colin Kaepernick-esque guy. Now, Tyrod Taylor, you say, okay, he's the best athlete quarterback in the National Football League. Well, that includes Colin Kaepernick, who I know, because we competed against him for a number of years, is a great athlete. Mm. That's intriguing to me.
Yeah.
Is this really now going to be the way that they're going to go?
And Jeff, that one is wide open, isn't it? Because, I'm with you. I look at that and I think, at the moment, you could go with the safe pair of hands, which would be Matt Cassel, but he had a bad summer and, he's got to have a really good training camp. You could sort of argue that, EJ Manuel's had his chance, but it does seem to be a completely open competition. Whereas I think with the Jets, to me, it feels like it's Geno Smith's job for now, and then that could be lost if he continues with the turnovers and the mistakes and doesn't show the leadership they need. Then they turn to Ryan Fitzpatrick. But to me, the Buffalo one feels like it's completely wide open now. The Jets one, and probably the Browns to some degree, feels like there's a starter in place with somebody that could challenge a little bit later down the road.
Well, let's look at all three of those. The thing you haven't talked about in all three of those situations, right? And, human nature is human nature. But all three of those situations, there are defensive head coaches in every one of those spots.
Yeah.
Right? And whether it's Rex or Mike Pettine, who work together, they really march in lockstep in terms of their philosophy of football. And then you look at Todd Bowles with the Jets, who's a defensive-minded guy and played defense, is a great defensive coach in Arizona. Well, typically, what a defensive head coaches want from the offense? They want to manage the game. They don't want to turn it over. Mm. They want to take care of the football, and they want to run the ball.
Yeah.
Right? That's the mantra that you hear from those guys. Well, is Rex really going to turn the ball over to a Tyrod Taylor who may make some great plays, but he's a little bit of a wild card out there too. And the same thing with Todd in New York. Is he going to let Geno be Geno if there's not marked improvement there, or go with a safer guy in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who started a lot of games, manages the game? The big knock on Ryan Fitzpatrick is he won't throw the ball down the field. He's a check down guy.
Yeah.
So, again, that's going to be the intriguing things that, the training camp will show us and the preseason games will show us. I love preseason football. I mean, I think that's where you really get a chance to see the bottom quarter of your roster play.
Yeah.
The guys that you're going to depend on as backups and part-time players and special teamers, that's where they're going to get a chance to really prove that they belong in the National Football League. I don't need to watch the Pro Bowl guy play. You'll see that for 16 weeks. I want to see that young kid or that veteran who's trying to hang on and get another year in the league. Those are the dramas that training camp. There's nothing like training camp football.
There's a phrase you don't hear every day. I love preseason football. Good one. Good on you, Jeff. What about Houston then? Because when we look at Ryan Mallett made two starts in 2014. Then he suffered the torn pectoral muscle. But he's the fan favorite. He's the one with the big, strong arm. Yes, there are accuracy issues, but he's the one with the perceived upside. That's why they went and got Ryan Mallett versus Brian Hoyer, who we're kind of painting this picture of this experienced veteran coming in as, again, that sort of safe pair of hands. But Brian Hoyer only has 17 starts to his NFL name, and it kind of went a bit sour towards the end in Cleveland after a really strong start. Different styles, again, and this is going to play out well, in the eyes of America, on Hard Knocks. But where do you see that one going? Because Bill O'Brien isn't that defensive coach that you've talked about, with those other teams.
Well, I think here's the thing, the interesting part about that battle is, let's talk about Ryan Mallett's pedigree. Where did he come out of? What NFL style of play and offense did he come from? Well, he came from New England, and O'Brien is a New England guy.
Yep.
So I think Mallett has the early advantage, not only because of his physical ability, but I think because of his familiarity with that offense and what they want to get done and how they operate, and the ability to throw the ball not only vertically down the field, but use your slots, use your tight ends, do the things that have made New England, such a tough offense to defend. Hoyer, on the other hand, had some moments in Cleveland, really did have some moments in Cleveland. But I think the whole Manziel thing and the drama that goes with all of that and the circus of, what last season was in Cleveland.
Yeah.
I think for him it's an opportunity to step back, clear his head a little bit, and get a fresh start in an organization that's, without all the fanfare and all the hype and, the cameras and all. Just let him play football and see if he's really good enough in those 17 starts, which we did see some evidence that the guy can, make plays at the NFL level, whether he's able to do that. Again, that's the beauty of training camp. They're going to have four exhibition games to fight that thing out, and every day on the field, twice a day on the field out there in the heat of Houston and the pressure of training camp. And people have to understand, when you're in a quarterback competition particularly, and we say this all the time in pro football, and I know you've heard coaches say it, Neil, but you're evaluated in everything you do. Well, that's no more truer than at the quarterback position.
Yeah.
Because it's beyond, whether you can throw the out or, how you read the zone read. It's how you lead that football team, how your teammates respond to, having you on the field when you're in the huddle. How do you run the huddle? What the whole deal, how do you study? How do you, how do you handle yourself with the media? All of those things are play into that position probably more than any other position. I think certainly more than any other position on the football field. So, again, it's a lot of stuff that you really, really got to go through. And again, I think that's why for a quarterback, training camp is, all day, every day, 24/7, you're being evaluated.
Well, yeah, you want to find out what the guy's made of. We talk about intangibles all the time. And, Andrew Luck was over here in the UK, a few weeks ago, Jeff, and we were just chatting between doing some bits and pieces. And one day we were sat talking about, I asked him about those, when you're about to go out on the field, there's 2 minutes left in a game, you're down by six and you need a touchdown. And I said, how do you feel? And he said, relaxed and excited. And I was like, that actually is not what every quarterback in the NFL would answer. I think they would like to answer that, but if they were being
they wouldn't answer that way if they're being honest. I mean, they may say that because that's what they think they're supposed to say, but there's a lot of them, you can see it in their eyes, that they're relaxed is not the mental state that they're in. I think the thing too, you talk about that kind of stuff. One of the great training camp stories to me is that Brady, after he was drafted, way down in the bottom of the draft with New England, and it's training camp, and Mr. Kraft is on the field, and Brady walks over to him and he said, Mr. Kraft, my name's Tom Brady. You drafted me out of Michigan, and I want you to know that's going to be the best draft. I'm the best draft pick you ever made.
Yep.
Now, what does that say about a kid who was a sixth rounder to walk up to the owner, introduce himself, and say, I'm the best draft pick you ever made? Those are the things you can't measure about a guy. I mean, you could look at Tom Brady, and I always go back to the pictures of him at training camp, where the
combine.
Where they show you, at the combine, where they show you in the underwear.
Yep.
And he looked like some kid that should have been at the library. I mean, he has a bad looking body. And that kid, that, part-time starter at Michigan, has grown into one of the greatest quarterbacks ever playing a game not because of his physical ability, but because of what he brings, all that other stuff, that will to win, that competitiveness, the accuracy, all of those things, most of which you can't measure until you get him into camp and you put him out there and see how they handle it.
Jeff, I was talking to Tom Brady at training camp summer of 2012, and I put that story to him and I said, that's incredible confidence and from a young player. Why did you have that belief? And he said, and I think he was a little bit embarrassed by it. He was like, I don't think I would have said that to Mr. Kraft. I'm not sure if I said all of all of that. I mean, I may have said something along those lines, but not those exact words. And afterwards, I was interviewing Mr. Kraft, and I said, so did he say it? And he was like, absolutely, he said it. That's exactly what he told me. He was just trying to play it down when we did the interview, you know?
Yeah, but you know what? See, that's again, like I say, that is the great thing that you're going to be able to bring to the listeners and to the NFL fans when you get back from these training camps is you see them when they're not mic'd up. Mm. And you see them when, you know, they're coming off the field and, you know, they're tired and they're, you know, it's hot and there's, you know, they're repetitious and it's, you know, and then all of a sudden the media guy grabs him and says, hey, I need you to talk to this guy from, you know, from the UK. Mm-hmm. And then you can tell real the body language is really,
yeah,
you know, some guys just have that factor and some guys are like, oh my God. Well, those guys that it's oh my God to typically are the guys that you go, man, oh man, oh man, that's not the guy I want to leave my team.
Well, Jeff, sometimes I wonder if I make a little bit too much of that body language thing. And, you know, a few weeks ago I mentioned Geno Smith being one of the last ones on the field. But I can remember a couple of years ago being in Minnesota and sitting down to do an interview with Cordarrelle Patterson. And the man who was running the camera, we actually used the Vikings team video guys, their in-house production crew that day, rather than our own cameraman. And they went to put a microphone on Cordarrelle Patterson, and he turned to the guy who was from his own team and said, I've got this. I think I know how to put a microphone on by now. Completely rude. And at the time, I just thought, immature, not really dealing with something very well. And now look at where Cordarrelle Patterson is with the Vikings. They question his maturity. They question his commitment. I'm telling you, the things are connected.
Absolutely. Always. It never changes. It never changes. And you know, go back. Let's go back. And, you know, this isn't one of those I told you so deals, but I told you so. When we talked about him coming out of Tennessee, he'd only played 1 year of football. In, you know, he'd been a junior college kid, went to Tennessee, issues about maturity, issues about selfishness, issues about, you know, will he study? Will he do the work? Will he be a pro? Well, there's a lot more to being a pro than cashing an NFL paycheck, a lot more. And guys like this that don't get it very quickly, you know, they're going to be out of the league way before their skill set diminishes to the point where they should be out of the league. They're going to be out of the league because they're going to move on to somebody else.
And that, Jeff, is a perfect segue to move on from training camps, which are opening around the NFL. They already opened with Minnesota and Pittsburgh. They open the rest later this week. But we're going to move on to the big news that the New Orleans Saints have cut Junior Gallette. Now, Junior Gallette was a player that we were talking about last week in our defensive ends. He's had 22 sacks over the last 2 years. They signed him to a four-year, $41.5 million contract extension only last year, but there's stories of fights in the locker room with teammates last year. He fought with, I think he punched Brandon Dedrick, according to reports. He had a fight with two teammates after a November loss to the 49ers. There's a very ugly video out there of him hitting a woman with a belt on a beach in Miami, which has been, the Saints have just discovered that, and they've made that available to the NFL. This looks like another one of those guys who, yes, the production is there, Jeff, but no team is going to want to, you know, take all of that negative stuff that goes with it, especially in your locker room. And he went on Twitter and made a, you know, he's saying that Drew Brees has got diminishing arm strength. He said Marcus Colston is washed up. He's criticizing the head coach. He's burning bridges left, right, and center here.
Yeah, you know what? It's just really not very smart. Just none of it very smart. And, you know, it's sad because here's a guy that can play the, you know, he can play the game. Mm. And, you know, I know if you're certainly Rob Ryan's got to just be shaking his head right now because, you know, it's such an important piece of the defense. And, you know, when you watch a team do what the Saints did last year, which is basically go backwards, typically, unless there are real injury issues, there's got to be another reason. There has to be something inside because Sean Payton all of a sudden just doesn't become a bad football coach.
No.
But, you know, the chemistry of a football team is maybe more important than the physical makeup of the football team. You know, there's a lot of great football players. Every team has them. Every team has them. But it's that ability for a group of individuals, a group of men, to function as a team that separates winning and losing at the highest level, because the talent is so even around the league. And a guy like that, as productive as he can be also more disruptive and destructive than he can be productive. And that's, you know, that's the story with this kid, apparently. And you know, the Saints have parted ways, and they're going to move forward. And you know, they may come out of it better for it. You know, sometimes subtraction is addition. You know, when you gotta cut loose from guys that just don't get it, don't get with the program, and don't, you know, aren't team guys.
Jeff, some people might ask what the Saints were doing, giving him a four-year, $41.5 million extension just 10 months ago, because, you know, they are going to take a big salary cap hit now for this coming season. This is how teams get in salary cap trouble. They're already in salary cap trouble. They've been in trouble for a number of years. People might point the finger at the Saints and say, did you not have an inkling that this guy was trouble 10 months ago? I mean, in their defense, surely they can't have known everything, otherwise they wouldn't have signed him to such a big deal. But you can see how teams get in salary cap trouble, can't you, Jeff? Because they're going to take a hit on this for certainly for next season.
Well, you know what, let's look even around. Don't blame the Saints. They're not the only one. You know, you've got to pay the going rate for talented players.
Yeah.
And if, you know, 10 months ago, you know, I don't know how much the Saints, you know, actually knew. And there's always a tendency in the business. And I'm just going to tell you, this is what goes on. And you know, people can say it's wrong, but, you know, let me just say the way it is. Coaching in you know, when you have an extremely talented player like Gallet is, a productive player who has issues, the tendency is to say, we can manage him. We'll educate him. We'll get him, you know, to the hardest thing for the organization to do is be honest and say, the guy's a pain. He's a problem. He's disruptive. He's all the things that have apparently surfaced that he is. Right now, there's starting to be some rumors and whispers coming out of Dallas about Dez and his situation.
Mm-hmm.
And how that, you know, he was in financial turmoil. And, you know, stuff that the Cowboys, you know, are having to deal with on a daily basis. Can't make it to meetings on time, misses planes, yada, 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 yada. All the stuff, right? The off-field stuff.
Yep.
Well, because they're so talented, you believe that you can somehow mitigate that and manage it and, you know, just get them to the game on time because they're such great performers. But sometimes, and I think this is what's happened in Gallet's case, sometimes – that it just becomes so overwhelming that as an organization, you got to say, we're going to take the hit on the field because we're going to lose a 22 sack guy, and we're going to take the hit in the salary cap just to get the guy out of here.
Mm. Yeah, I think, Jeff, it goes back to, you know, you can argue whether it's right or wrong morally, but, you know, I go back to a book I read about Jimmy Johnson when they were building those winners in Dallas. You know, in the 1990s, Jimmy Johnson was quite open. He said, not everyone is going to be treated the same. You know, an undrafted rookie will not have the same amount of chances as Emmitt Smith. And I remember in that book, I can't remember the name of the guy, but there was a rookie running back who fell asleep in a team meeting. Jimmy cut him straight away. And then some of the veterans were sort of saying, well, Charles Haley falls asleep every meeting. But it was different rules for different players. You just try and manage that because, you know, this is still a production business, isn't it? You don't want to have, you know, clear troublemakers and obviously there is an image to uphold, but if you feel you can manage it, then absolutely as a team you're going to try and do that as much as you can.
Yeah, Belichick talked about, you know, Lawrence Taylor falling asleep in meetings. Yeah, he fell asleep in meetings, but he never fell asleep on Sunday, right? But there's going to be at some point with those guys, there's going to be that tipping point where the production or the player is not worth the distractions and the issues that they bring.
Yeah.
Coach Vermeil said it this way, and it's interesting. He sent me last week the last meeting notes he ever took as a head coach of the Kansas City Chiefs in 2005, and it's an unbelievable gift. And in there he writes that your talent only buys you time, and your production will buy you time. But eventually, if you're not, he used the term chief. If you're not a chief, you won't be a chief. And that's what's happened with Gallette. I'm sure that the defensive coaches that's a big chunk of production to lose off your football team. But in the end, I really do believe that it's addition by subtraction. You get rid of a problem and there'll be another guy that'll step in there, maybe not as well, and maybe not as productive early in his career, whatever, but they'll get a guy in there that'll make plays. You know, there's nobody sitting in any NFL meeting room or any NFL coach's room that has the name on the back of his chair. Mm. I mean, there was a guy in that chair when you got sat, before you sat in it, and there'll be a guy in that chair when you're out of it. So it's just the nature of the business.
Yeah, we saw that with Arizona last year. Bruce Arians thrived on that whole next man up philosophy. One more piece of news, Jeff, I want to talk about, and then we'll move on to our top five offensive linemen. I noticed with interest that the Colts have released right tackle Gosde Cherelis. He had a tough time in 2014. He's got a chronic knee injury, which has kind of held him back. They look like they're going to turn to Jack Muhort at right tackle, Anthony Costanzo at left tackle. But the reason I thought this was interesting, Jeff, was because Cherelis, and it relates to another big star around the NFL, Cherelis was the one who came out when Jadeveon Clowney had the microfracture surgery in his knee and said, well, basically, you're done, kid. You're done. Because Cherelis had that same operation, and now here we are with Gosde Cherelis not getting the job done with the Indianapolis Colts and being released 2 years after signing a five-year contract in 2013. So, you know, that's going to make Houston Texans fans a little bit nervous as well.
Well, it certainly is. And, you know, the fact that the Texans have already placed him on the physically unable to perform list.
Mm.
And, you know, here's a guy there were a lot of questions about this kid when he was coming out of South Carolina. Had a very off senior year, at times as a junior, completely dominated games, and then as a senior, just looked disinterested most of the time. And, you know, questions about his work ethic, question about a knee, you know, now I think that knee has turned into a more of a problematic thing than maybe the doctors anticipated. You know, you've got microfracture surgery, which is, as Cherelis says, very difficult to come back from. It takes a long time. And it's really kind of a last resort kind of operation for guys with knee issues. You know, that's a really, really, that's a tough one. I looked at, it's interesting, when you talk about first round draft choices, you're talking about you expect that guy to be a Pro Bowl player. Right at some point in his career, that's the value you place on a first round draft choice, and to have a first round draft choice that really never gets on the field, that sets your franchise back a long way.
All right, Jeff, let's move on to our top five offensive linemen in the NFL then, and we've decided to lump these guys all together. Now we understand very different skill sets from a center to a guard, from a center to a left tackle is worlds apart. You know, there's a difference between a left tackle and a right tackle. But we're putting all of our offensive linemen in one basket. So, Jeff, I won't ask you, as I've done from an X's and O's point of view, to break down each position. I'll just ask you this. Can you win in pro football without a good offensive line consistently?
Absolutely. I don't think so. I really don't think so. And it's interesting you use the term lump them all together, because in the old days these were the lumpy guys. This is, you know, like the this is, you know, they used to call them hog mollies, the bad body guys. Well, you look at the group that, I don't know about your group, but I look at the group I put together, and you know, there's some of these cats could be doing underwear commercials. I mean, these are athletes now. These aren't just a bunch of fat guys waddling around. I think that you look at a football team, And one of the areas where you really can get a feel for the pulse of the football team, for the toughness of the football team, is the offensive line. Watch an offensive line play. And typically, if you've got, and I know the quarterback is obviously the most important position on the field, but when you have an offensive line that plays well together and is physical and gifted athletically, you always have a chance because you can run the ball. You know, you got the ability to protect the quarterback and run the football. So these guys are, you know, it's the left tackles in this bunch that make all the money. But to me, this is, you better have a good group up front, and they better, you know, not just be good individually, they have to be good collectively. That's the really interesting part of all this. And doggone it, you better have yourself a really good offensive line coach. And that's, you know, again, I think that's another factor in all of this, you know, when you look at it. And, you know, I'm going to start with the tackles.
Okay. Right?
And I like, it's interesting because there's three guys, two veterans and a young kid, that really jumped to me as guys that are elite level guys. You know, Andrew Whitworth in Cincinnati, Neil, doesn't get the publicity that, you know, because he's playing in a small market city, he's a Bengal, and, you know, he doesn't get the acclaim in the media that I think he deserves, because you watch him play.
Yeah.
And he is really, really a fine player. He's got great balance. He's a tremendous setter. He's a great, he went through a streak last year where nobody touched the quarterback. And I think he is truly an elite left tackle guy. Now, I love Joe Thomas as my other tackle. And I tell you, there's things about Joe Thomas. And when Joe Thomas was at Wisconsin, we played him when I was at Hawaii. And I remember we had two defensive ends that both played in the NFL that went against him that day. And, you know, it was a battle. But Joe Thomas was so impressive to me because of his physicalness and his athleticism. And, you know, what's proven over time, here's a kid that gets a knee injury coming out of college. The day he's drafted, he's out on a boat fishing with his dad because he's not a hype guy at all.
Mm-hmm.
He's the perfect guy for Cleveland.
Yep.
And during his time in Cleveland, he's never missed a game. I mean, never missed a game. Been a dominant player on a bad football team every year, regardless of score, regardless of record, regardless of any of it, just comes out and plays at the highest level at a very difficult position to play in the National Football League. So I think he's a guy that, you know, certainly is a Pro Bowler every year. And I think those are my top two. Now, there's a young guy in Dallas that when you watch him play, Tyron Smith.
I think he's fantastic.
I'm anxious to see him in training camp. He's a really, really, really fine player. And, you know, probably athletic enough to play any place. I remember when they drafted him out of USC, there was so much talk about what a great athlete, how gifted he is. And, you know, when you look at him, physically look at him, he looks like a defensive lineman.
Yep.
You know, he's really, really, really got a great physical length to him. He's strong. He's flexible. He's nasty. He's got all of the qualities that you look for. And is just now, in my opinion, just now coming into his own as a player. And I think will be the next great, great one as Whitworth and Thomas kind of their career begins to fade now because they're veterans. Tyron Smith is, to me, the next up in that group of guys. Then below that, you know, I really like the two that the Patriots have. I think, and again, they don't get a lot of publicity. Nate Solder and Sebastian Vollmer, particularly Vollmer. I thought Vollmer during, and again, he's a guy that's near and dear to us because he came through our program.
Yeah.
But, I thought Sebastian in the playoffs and the Super Bowl played extremely well, extremely well. And, he's battled through a back injury and, you know, he's played, sometimes he's played on the left. When he has a chance to play at right tackle, he really, really is a fine football player. I mean, a long 6'6 kid who's strong and tough and got the nastiness to run block, but also athletic enough to pass block.
Mm.
And then Joe Staley with is, I think, a really good player. I think he's, again, one of those guys. So that's my tackles. When you move inside the guard, to me, you got to start with a veteran, a 10-year guy, Marshall Yanda in in Baltimore, and just a mauler in the run game. I mean, just a physical, nasty guy. But again, a better athlete than you think, because he's at times in his career had to jump out and play tackle, which is really a tough transition to make. But I think he's, for me, I want that nasty, tough, hard guy in there in the trenches. You know, he's going to play over those 300 pounders, and he's proven in his career to be one of the top run blockers in the league. And then, you know, Zach Martin and with the Cowboys, who is a completely at the other side of the spectrum, you know, in terms of age and where he's at in his career, but just really a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous athlete. When he came into the league, you know, there was just everybody looked at him and said, that's going to be a guy. And, you know, sometimes that can be too much for a player to that kind of anticipation, I guess, or you know, people saying he's going to be a Pro Bowler. Well, doggone if he didn't step in and play a Pro Bowl level from the very time he, you know, when he first stepped into the huddle at Dallas. So those are my two guards. Center is an interesting one for me. You know, I look at the position, and I got three guys kind of, you know, all kind of interesting. You know, Travis Frederick as the young one,
yep,
on the come, really good. You know, how many times do you see a first round draft choice offensive lineman? I mean, that's the kind of things that makes the people at the, you know, at the draft, the fans that go to the draft, they boo when that happens.
Yeah.
They
want now look at what Dallas have done.
Yeah, and you know what? And it's interesting because Bill Polian, who built those great Bills teams, subscribes to that theory. He goes, I'll never take a guy who doesn't have an impact with the football in the first round. Never do it.
Right.
Doesn't believe the offensive linemen are worth that. But you watch this kid play, and you know what? He's probably worth that. And he's in his third year now, just that great young Cowboys offensive line. And you know, here's a kid that's just coming into his own, and you watch him play. He's athletic. He can pull. He can, you know, he can handle a nose tackle in front of him, which is a very difficult thing. He can get to the second level. I saw some plays from the game in Dallas, in London last year against the Jags, and he was up on the second level. Like, you know, he looked like he was 260 pounds, and there's a 315-pound guy with that kind of athleticism. Marquise Pouncey, I think, is one of the top ones from the Steelers, is one of the top guys in the league right now. He's in his sixth year, and if he can stay healthy, I think we'll, you know, be a Pro Bowler for a couple more years. But the old guy, the old long guy, the old veteran with the long hair and and that beard that you guys had over last week and 2 weeks ago in the UK, Nick Mangold from the Jets, still got a lot of game. Still got a lot of game, and he's a wily old 10-year veteran out of Ohio State, and really understands. While maybe he's not as physically dominant as he once was as a center, still has a great first step. Really understands leverage. Extremely smart. You watch him play, and rarely do they make a mistake along the line in terms of line calls and how they pick up a blitz, and that all comes down to the center because he has to identify all the fronts and all of that. So he's kind of my little sentimental favorite as a center. I really think he's a fine player. And I think the fans will really enjoyed him, and when he was in the UK last week, and will enjoy him when he comes back again when the Jets come to London.
Yeah, absolutely. Good guy and a leader of that team for sure. I'll give you my five then, Jeff. And I've tried to mix it up. So I've got some guards. I've got some centers. At number five, I've got Zach Martin. I think, you know, the Cowboys showed tremendous discipline in resisting the urge to take Johnny Manziel, and they just upgraded that offensive line. I remember being around Michael Irvin last year ahead of the Wembley game with the Cowboys and the Jags, and he said there were a lot of ex-players at the NFL Network who were talking about Zach Martin as an MVP candidate, not just a Rookie of the Year candidate. They felt he was one of the very best offensive linemen in the NFL, and I think that's clear that he is. He's got a really bright future. At number four, I'm going to have Nick Mangold, the grizzly old veteran, for all the reasons you mentioned. At number three, I've got Marshall Yander of Baltimore. I think he's the best interior lineman in the game today. At two, I've got Joe Thomas of the Cleveland Browns. Again, same as you, I think just brings it every time, every game. That's why he was so, I think, so frustrated when he was quite outspoken on Johnny Manziel's comments when Manziel said he wasn't really working that hard. I think that frustrated somebody like Joe Thomas. And top of the pile for me is the young guy from Dallas. I've seen him work on the practice field last summer at Cowboys camp. I'm going to look forward to seeing him again this weekend. But Tyron Smith, I think as you used the word, Jeff, he's just long. I mean, he's just a physical athlete. He looks like the kind of guy who, if you lined him up and said, go and run 100 metres, I could see him running sort of 10-5. And then you could say to him, go and dunk a basketball, and I could see him doing that. And then, you know, go and hit some baseball. He just is an athlete. He's not your NFL offensive lineman from 30 years ago. This is a lean, long, physical beast who can do it all. And so for me, he's top of the pile. But there's a lot of good tackles to choose from as well.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? Tyron Smith, as you say, you look at him, and you know, if you didn't know he was, if he just came out there with in a uniform with no number on it, you'd think, maybe a big tight end,
yep,
defensive end.
Exactly.
And shoot, he's a tackle. That's how athletic he looks. And, you know, that you got to, again, you ask that question about the importance of an offensive line. Well, I think what fans are going to see, regardless who's carrying the ball in Dallas, they're going to run the football well, mm-hmm, because they are so good up front. And that's not, again, that's not a knock on DeMarco Murray, because he had a tremendous year last year. But the reality of it is, the greatest running back, if he doesn't have offensive linemen who can, you know, move people and create seams in the defense, and I won't say holes, because holes is really a misnomer anymore.
Yeah,
really,
holes.
You're trying to get cracks. You're trying to get seams or cracks or movement. And if you can't do that, it's tough for any running back to gain yards. And that Cowboy offensive line is really, really, really good. I mean, really good. And, you know, at not only just running football, but at keeping Tony Romo up on his feet. And that's going to be a key for them as they, you know, make this push. And this is really, I think they, if you're a Cowboy fan, you know, with Romo's age, you got to say, you know, our window is closing. So we need to, you know, make a strong push right now to become a Super Bowl caliber team. And I think that offensive line is going to play a big, big part in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll take a break from our position rankings next week, because I think we should talk a lot about training camps and the news that's going around the NFL. By the time we record our podcast, from the US next week, I'll have seen Dallas, San Francisco and Kansas City, so we can talk about those. Jeff, one question I want to take out of the mailbag just to wrap up, and I think it's a good one for you to tackle from a coaching point of view. It's a good question, comes from Alex Harbour, who says, how much does poor weather on game day, such as strong wind, rain or snow, cause a team to deviate from its game plan that they've been working on all week?
You know what? That is a phenomenal question, and one that is kind of topical, because we just went out to Saskatchewan, which is out in the prairies of Canada, out in Western Canada.
Yep.
And played Saskatchewan, won the game 31-21. And a big part of our preparation was anticipation of what we were going to have to deal with the elements out there. Because when you're on the prairies, you're about 3 hours east of the Rocky Mountains, and when the winds come off the mountains and they blow across that prairie, there's not a tree to stop it. I mean, it is flat, and you know,
gets a good run up, does it,
Jeff? When you go into that stadium, you have to be able to deal with the prevailing winds. And all week long, we were in communication with, actually, my son, who works for the Air Force and runs a weather observation facility outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and he would send us each day the most updated wind anticipation and precipitation and all of that, because we felt like if we could manage the wind, if we could get points when we had the wind and make the game longer when the opponent was into the wind, we would win the football game, and that's exactly the way it turned out. Mm. I mean, at one point, and this is such a great question. I mean, you're a great question. We practiced all week a special kickoff return formation where we actually had four returners in the game, because when they kick into the wind, the ball
could go anywhere.
crazy things and hung up in there. And they kicked one into the wind, and our guy caught it at midfield because the ball got blown. So the wind was so tough. And so, you know, your ability to deal with the weather is critical. And do you deviate from your game plan? Well, if you put together a game plan based upon what you anticipate, say, for example, you go into Green Bay in December. Well, you got to know you're going to deal with environmental factors. Mm. And you better have, as Frank Gans used to say all the time, anticipatory management. You better be able to understand how you're going to deal with those, you know, atmospheric conditions, if you will. And great football teams and great coaches can manage it. And teams that don't, you know, it becomes something that gets them.
Mm, that's fascinating, Jeff, because it's not simple. You should never, I guess, then as a coach be, now you're going to get weather that rolls in that no one expects, like when we did that Philadelphia-Detroit game on Sky a few years ago and all that snow came in. But you should have some idea of what's coming and what's ahead. That's on you guys as coaches.
Yeah, and fans need to understand that this is all of the stuff that the fan never sees. As a coaching staff, you're going to get up to date. I mean, like I say, my son sent us, and we're lucky because obviously we had access to high-level information, but he sent us at my 10:30 meeting, special teams meeting on game day. I had I had satellite photos of the stadium and how the wind patterns were going to be each hour during the game, and how the wind was going to shift during the game and all that. So all that is information that you have to have, because, you know, if you have access to technology or information and you don't use it, you're not giving your team its best chance to win. Here's an example of anticipatory management. I have a kid that's drafted out of Hawaii. He as a long snapper, Jake Ingram. He goes to the Patriots, makes the Patriots as a fifth round draft choice. He's third day of training camp. He's out there getting ready to snap to the punter. Hmm. All of a sudden, the equipment guys come out with a big green garbage can, you know, like you see on the side of the street, and there's water sloshing in it as they bring it out. It's sloshing over the top. And they sit it next to Jake, and they said, Coach Belichick wants you to use these footballs. And he had soaked footballs all night long so that Jake had to snap wet footballs. And it was a perfectly good New England summer day. And he's out there snapping wet footballs that Belichick had soaked all night because he wanted to see how the young kid was going to react in a situation where he didn't anticipate having to snap a wet football. That's anticipatory management. That's what the great coaches do.
Good stuff, Jeff. And great that you had that inside information. It's a good job China or Russia didn't fancy taking a pop at the US last week. Sounds like the Air Force was a bit preoccupied.
Maybe I shouldn't have said that. My memo.
Good stuff this week, Jeff. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. We'll speak to you next week. Jeff, I'll speak to you from the road.
Hey, yeah, call me when you're driving between all those stops, but don't call me when it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're halfway between Oxnard and San Jose.
No, as I drive past Santa Barbara Airport cursing under my breath. I could have been flying out of there in the morning. Good stuff, Jeff. We'll speak to you next week. Until then, say goodbye to the good folks.
I will. And hey, but before I say goodbye, tell all those guys on the road when you're out there, I said hello to you. And I hope everybody has a great season. Aloha.